From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. My name is Noel.
Yes, and I am Ben. We are, as always, joined in spirit by our producer and co-host, Matt. Let's see, what should we call him today?
I mean, I like the alliteration of the madman.
What about Matt the Militant Frederick?
Oh, that's good.
That's good. That's apropos.
Yeah.
So before we start today's episode, Noel, I was thinking that we could have a little bit of a tangential conversation.
Sure.
You okay with that?
Of course.
All right.
I'm fond of the tangent.
Fond of the tangent, yes. All right, so have you ever observed in real life a widespread, like, a panic?
It's funny that you say that. You know, there's that jam band called Widespread Panic.
Yeah, I know. I was fighting not to make a joke about it, but it's going to come out.
It's fine. Let it come. No, I don't think so. You know, I mean, nothing, definitely no form of, like, mass hysteria or any kind of situation where I felt threatened or I felt like, you know, things were out of hand. I mean, well, actually now that I think about it, I did go to a Creed concert, when I was a kid, and I did feel like there was some, you know, they were on the edge of pandemonium.
Really?
Playing my own prison. I mean, Creed exudes a certain kind of energy that just gets into you and makes you do crazy stuff. So that's the closest situation that I could think of.
And we've all been in a similar situation, folks. You know, you've been in a school or a building where a fire alarm goes off, and usually people proceed in an orderly manner until they actually see the flames or feel the smoke. Some of our listeners have been in riot situations, have been in combat situations, have been in, you know, on the scene of tremendous catastrophes, right? And what we notice often is that in today's day and age, it's easier now than ever before for an event or rumors about an event to spread across the world. It's so much easier. You're just a click away from talking to someone on the other side of the planet. So what we're looking at today is something sort of related to these things. We are coming back to update you on Jade Helm 15. So first, I guess we have to say, what is Jade Helm 15?
Well, a little background. Jade Helm 15 was a multi-state military exercise that took place from July 15th of 2015 to September 15th of 2015. So this was basically an exercise in unconventional warfare, and then it involved the U.S. Army Special Operations Command and the Joint Special Operations Command, with other U.S. Armed Forces units also involved. It happened in the following states: in Texas, Arizona, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, New Mexico, and Utah.
Yeah, and maps of the exercise, which you should check out if you're at all interested in that, maps of the exercise included areas of the U.S. like Colorado or California where there weren't any operations planned. So here's what happens. The troops involved in the exercise are playing on two different teams. They're either occupying forces or resistance forces, and they're fighting each other and testing out these techniques in sparsely populated areas near small towns. And some of the troops in these scenarios wore civilian clothes and drove civilian vehicles. The exercise originally was supposed to have the creme de la creme from four military branches, but it was reduced along the way to only include 200 special operation forces and 300 support personnel, with about 700 members of the 82nd Airborne traveling to Texas to train for like a week in August. And Noel, you remember that earlier in May, we did an episode on Jade Helm before it happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
there was a lot of concern. People were, let's say, a little worried.
And we read a lot of strange stuff about it too.
Right.
So today we're going to talk about what actually happened during Jade Helm. If you want to hear some of the background, check out our earlier podcast in May. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about the social psychology behind widespread panic. Oh, there's the joke. Dude, it's such a horrible joke. We mean the phenomenon.
Yeah.
Not the band. The band's all right, though.
They're okay.
Do you ever listen to them?
I'm going to say no.
You know, I had a couple of songs there that I would put on for writing music just for, like, you know, the really instrumental stuff.
I spent a lot of time in Athens, and they came out of there originally, and they are pretty revered. But it was never really my scene.
Never really your scene? No. Not a jam band man?
Not a jam band man.
All right. I like that phrase, jam band man.
It's fun to say, for sure.
It is fun to say. All right. So speaking of amazing segues, Noel, let's talk about some of those reports, some of those crazy things we heard. And let's start with the alleged stuff.
So the biggest, I guess you can say, shady thing that occurred was the closure of Walmart stores. And this is actually, I mean, before, you know, doing the research for this, the one detail that I really remember people being up in arms about was like, uh-oh, what's happening? They're closing Walmart. It's Armageddon.
Right, you know? Right.
So there was, you know, these closures of Walmart stores across the areas, and believers in this particular conspiracy, I suppose, alleged the stores were closing to reopen as internment camps, I suppose.
Wow. So yeah. When did this happen? How'd it go down?
Well, Walmart closed 5 stores in April, laying off more than 2,200 employees in California, Texas, Oklahoma, and Florida due to ongoing plumbing issues.
Yeah, that was the official explanation. Was that there were persistent plumbing issues, so they need to close the stores for, 6 months to a year or something? And some of the things that we heard people saying were that these stores were being closed only to be reopened as warehouses or internment centers, right, to keep the local population that wasn't in step with the New World Order. But we have an update about 6 months later.
Do we have an official statement from Walmart?
The official statement from Walmart was that this was entirely unrelated.
Okay.
And that it was seriously just due to plumbing issues.
That's a shame.
But it seems strange, because we talked about this in a previous episode. It seems strange that it would close so suddenly, because the employees had no idea.
I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of a Walmart closing. I think Walmarts are just infinite, you know, to me.
Yeah, it reminds me of the there's this really interesting thing that I believe it might be FEMA that has it, called the Waffle House Index. Have you heard of that?
No, tell me.
So it's a measure of disasters, like the degree of a disaster in an area can be measured by how it affects the Waffle Houses, because they are the most likely things to remain open. So there is a legit Waffle House Index. For people who are not from the South, I guess we shouldn't assume that everyone knows about Waffle House. How would we describe Waffle House?
It's a diner, I guess, like sort of a crappy, I mean, the name is pretty accurate. It's a Waffle House. It's a house of waffles.
They serve a lot of waffles.
Yeah. They have a jukebox with Waffle House themed music on it. And in addition to your typical honky tonk kind of, you know, Patsy Cline, things like that.
And they're all over the Southeast.
And they're open 24 hours a day.
And they're open 24 hours a day. They rarely close. They've been open during, blizzards, during floods, during hurricanes. That's why there's this Waffle House Index, which makes me wonder why we don't have a Walmart Index. No, that seems like it would be even a larger scale.
They did close multiple stores, right?
Yeah, they closed 5.
But they were not in the same area though, were they?
No, they weren't in the same area. They were in different states.
So how could there be unrelated plumbing issues at stores in different states at the same time that they would need to close the stores for all at the same time?
Ah, great question. Because some other people who did not buy the official explanation would be the employees of these stores, those over 2,200 people. And many of them believed that the stores were being closed, particularly one in California, because the employees were organizing, unionizing essentially for better pay, better hours, more equity in the workplace. And it's true that Walmart had been found guilty of doing the same kind of retaliation closing in Canada earlier.
Okay, well, that does ring true.
That sounds a little more likely. But 6 months later, Walmart reopened the stores, and they invited former employees back to their jobs.
I love that you use the word invited. You know, come on back, y'all. Open arms.
You have to wonder. I'd love to hear from one of those employees. You have to wonder what their perspective is.
Absolutely. You know? And please, if anyone listening, you know, was in that situation, please, please send a letter. It's interesting stuff. Well, let's move on from Walmart to some other kind of red flags. One of them is widespread outages, reports of widespread outages in these areas that were hosting these war games.
Oh, it's like internet.
Yeah, exactly. So it's basically the idea that multiple communication channels, whether cell signals, internet service, et cetera, cut out or were somehow interfered with all at the same time around these events. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't personally confirm a lot of these reports, but they're definitely out there. They're being discussed.
Right. And the question there is one of, you know, coincidence or collusion. Everybody's had crappy cell phone service or cable service before, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we live in a land notorious for that.
It's true.
Let's speculate a little, Noel. If this were to occur, if there were a concerted effort to cut communication channels, which we know is possible, and the U.S. has done it before, why would they do it? To what end? You know?
I mean, if we're spitballing here, I guess they maybe wouldn't want reports of the locations of these, you know, these exercises to go out. They wouldn't want people to be blogging about it. They wouldn't want, you know, people to be causing a fuss.
That sounds reasonable.
I suppose, but again, I don't understand why these exercises needed to be so secretive in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that we could say about that is, they would need to be secretive so that other forces, other foreign powers don't know the nuts and bolts of how they
couldn't observe these maneuvers or whatever.
That's something that, again, is just spitballing. It seems reasonable, but I haven't heard the official rationale for it. There's another concern here, one of these alleged concerns, which was pretty interesting to me and kind of far out. It was one of the most fringe concerns we heard, and it was that the U.S. was secretly preparing for an asteroid impact, some heavy, you know, apocalyptic, end-of-the-world type stuff, you know, which I think is an exciting idea.
Yeah, it's almost like Bruce Willis and his crew of ragtag, you know, blue-collar workers weren't able to blow up the asteroid in time, and so this was the plan B.
Right, the plan B to contain the area. And if you look at the map, then because the states are primarily contiguous, you know, it looks like there's a specific region marked out. So one of the things that really propelled this belief was the actions of religious fundamentalists who believed that an asteroid impact would usher in the apocalypse, sure. The biblical apocalypse.
The end times.
The end times, yes. And that there would be seven, I think it's...
Horsemen? There was only four of those.
They doubled up on the horsemen, almost doubled up. They believe that there would be a period of tribulation, rapture, all this stuff. And so this group is a little bit different in comparison to the other groups who believe there was an asteroid impact, because their predictions were based on interpretations of ancient text, right, rather than contemporary events. But a lot of people began to believe this, and so many, in fact, that eventually NASA had to take to the internet.
What did they have to say about it?
Yeah, they had to put out a statement that said, guys, it's probably not the end of the world. You have the text here too, right? Could you do a...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I sure do. Okay, so...
Could you do an interpretation?
Of course. Here's my best PR voice. NASA knows of no asteroid or comet currently on collision course with Earth, so the probability of a major collision is quite small. In fact, as best as we can tell, no large object is likely to strike the Earth any time in the next several hundred years.
No further questions. No further questions.
Yeah, pretty much.
That was pretty good.
It was good.
That was a good PR voice. Mm-hmm. So here's one of the problems with this idea, Noel. It would be so, so very difficult to keep an impact event like this secret, or the threat of one. Just because, even if everybody in NASA said, Yeah, secrets are cool. Let's keep a secret. I always wanted a secret.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Just, you know, for fun.
Yeah. It'll be, we're going to Shyamalan these guys.
I love it.
I love it too. That's how NASA people at NASA talk.
We'll pull a Shamalama Dingo.
Right. Skidoo. But that's the problem. Even if NASA was on board with this and the U.S. government, there are so many other astronomers, institutions, states, organizations.
Colleges. I mean.
Colleges. Yeah. Actively watching the sky. Someone else would find out about this. So. We also have, that's our alleged stuff, but we also have some proven things that happened, right? The basic one is that it was proven that the exercise was actually conducted and all those operations did occur. The military cautiously describes it as successful, though they point out they haven't conducted a full post-exercise analysis.
Now, is this something that they do periodically? Like, I mean, was this like a new idea? To do something like this, like in civilian areas?
This may be a no, it is not. This may be one of the largest, but it may use different or newer techniques, but military exercises are necessary, arguably, and they occur fairly often. Mm-hmm. They do occur periodically, not just here in the U.S., but around the world. And we talked about that, I think, a little bit in our last episode. You know, you can read how when tensions rise in some countries, North Korea, South Korea, Japan, Russia, the Middle East, then other states will begin doing military exercises, you know, right off the coast or right around there. These drills are necessary to make sure that the enormous amounts of money governments spend on hardware and weaponry and soldiers actually is worth it, you know, that you get the literal bang for your buck, right? I'm sorry.
No, it's good.
I'm not proud of that
one. Skidoo.
Skidoo. But yes, there's another thing that was proven here. A tremendously controversial figure during this debate was a fellow named Alex Jones.
Good old Alex Jones. Good old AJ.
Mm-hmm. As he has never asked us to call him. I don't think Matt's spoken with Alex Jones in person either. I haven't.
No.
Have you?
I tried to get him. I almost got him, actually. I made a little documentary several years ago. He was an outspoken, critic of the subject of the documentary, which was the Georgia Guidestones. Right. And I got up one of his people and they were emailing back pretty regularly and then just kind of stopped. So, but it sounded like it was going to happen, but then it didn't. I didn't even really know that much about him at the time, but since I realized, oh, he's probably highly paranoid. Doesn't talk to very many people.
Well, he's probably very, very busy.
Well, he's very busy, but I get a sense that he likes to control his channels. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, my film, there was potential that he could have been taken out of context. I think he likes to control the medium of the delivery of his messages.
Oh, that makes sense. Cause you don't want to. Yeah, that does make sense. You would have to be very protective of that. And it's easy in, especially in documentaries, for people to be taken out of context. Mm-hmm. For the record, I think that's a great documentary. We've talked about it on the show before. If you haven't seen it, write to us if you are at all interested in the Georgia Guidestones.
Definitely.
So Alex Jones, in this case, he covers a lot of stuff. He got a lot of flack and ridicule in the mainstream for the way he talked about Jade Helm. People said that he was being alarmist and he was making wild claims about the takeover of the U.S., you know, very Red Dawn-ish, for different reasons. He said that he was instead pointing out that the exercise was kind of a frog in a pot thing, you know, the old metaphor for cooking frogs.
No, I'm afraid I'm not aware of this one.
No, it's not a metaphor. Sorry. It's a comparison. So the idea, and this is familiar to a lot of our listeners, is that you can cook frogs by putting them in water and slowly turning up the heat. Because if it slowly turns up at a certain rate, then they will not panic and jump out, but they will slowly boil to death. Because once you work your way up to a boil, it's too late. Mm-hmm. So this idea is somewhat similar when Alex Jones says, well, these are conducted to familiarize people with this concept of an overarching federal
police
government.
State.
Oh, a police state. Sure. That's a perfect word, Noel. It's a perfect term. So he saw this as the boil being turned up just a little bit more. And he also said that Jade Helm, the last part, was an acronym for homeland eradication of local militants. And I don't know. I don't think the government would be that on the nose, but it does show us that his audience or some part of his audience was concerned that this exercise was meant to root out local militias and other groups or individuals able to defend each other against the military.
So is that who would have been interred in the Walmarts? The
right.
Local militia members.
Right. And one thing that's interesting about this is that that in the past has been a legitimate concern on both sides. You know, we hear about local armed groups numerous times, and I can't, you know, for a couple of reasons, I can't provide a solid source on this, but I can assure you, or I can't compromise the source, I guess, but I can assure you that secessionist groups are far more widespread than the media would have you believe. We've talked about it briefly here on the air as well, but you know, here in Georgia, there's like a sovereign state of Georgia, and these are the people who have their own license plates, their own IDs, have signs posted up saying this is not U.S. property, you are not allowed here, claiming diplomatic immunity, none of which, of course, is acknowledged by the courts. So there is, it is important to know that there is a culture of secessionists, but they are different from a culture of what you would call, you know, local military groups or people who are exercising their right to be armed, which in this country is a right.
I mean, I guess you could think of a militia as sort of a, an armed to the teeth neighborhood watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or in, constitutionally, it was kind of an insurance policy.
Sure.
Right. But anyhow, that's a pretty touchy subject for a lot of people. It's something we can come back to later. But how did Jade Helm get in the mainstream to begin with? It's because politicians got involved, right?
Of course.
So Texas Governor Greg Abbott was prominent among the politicians asking for more information, enlisting the local Texas police forces to keep an eye on the Jade Helm activities. Senator Ted Cruz also asked for more information. So this really catapulted it into the mainstream. However, now that the exercise is over and there is not a one world government in charge of the region,
That we know of.
That's fair. Yeah. Now that that has occurred, a lot of the people who were talking about this are not as talkative.
Yeah, I noticed that. And we did a Periscope thing the other day and this came up and I admittedly kind of had lost track of the story. And as we discussed, for good reason, because the story just sort of fizzled a little bit, you know?
Right. Let's point out some other military exercises
sure.
that also occurred. Yeah, there's Bold Alligator.
Love that name.
Yeah, it's a naval exercise where thousands of Marines and sailors do amphibious landings, and they try to prevent insurgent groups in a fictional country called Garnet. And that's actually something right on the border of Georgia and Florida. And then that, there's another one, right?
Another example is this exercise called Robin Sage, in which U.S. Special Forces support fictional guerrilla forces in numerous counties across North Carolina. Green Beret soldiers work to liberate another fictional country called Pineland.
Mm-hmm.
Or Pineland. I like Pineland. That sounds better.
Yeah.
And operate in very close proximity to civilians who are, you know, for the record, warned that they may hear blanks being fired.
Right. And then there's the Marine Special Operations Troop exercise that's called Derna Bridge. And this is also in South Carolina, Western South Carolina, and it has some activities in the Sumter National Forest. Here's something that did happen, though. There were altercations that are on record between the military and civilians, wherein civilians were firing on or attacking or planning some activities just in case Jade Helm went sideways, went pear-shaped. Three North Carolina men, a guy named Walter Literal, Christopher Barker, and Christopher Campbell, were arrested for amassing weapons and conspiring to combat the government's alleged plan to impose martial law. These guys had pipe bombs, they had some legal weapons and some illegal weapons. as far as I know, they didn't attack anyone. They were just caught on record.
Yeah. They kind of adopted a wait and see attitude.
Right. And, I think Littoral, who was the, leader of the group, the de facto leader, had also booby trapped his house. And there was a lot of, this is my thing though. They were amassing illegal weapons, but they hadn't attacked anyone. Mm-hmm. There's a different case in Mississippi, where a sheriff said authorities are searching for two men who fired gunshots from a vehicle at soldiers at a military facility. And this was at Camp Shelby in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And it happened like 2 days. It happened multiple days. So what we're finding now is that despite concerns over the possibilities of Jade Helm, there was not a takeover, as some had feared, but other people who objected to Jade Helm, most notably Alex Jones, say that this is part of a slow program to remove local resistance to federal power. And at this point, that is where we are, and that's where we are with Jade Helm. Mm-hmm. No one was interned. The Walmarts reopened, but we are also left with some questions that go into not just this specific instance, but in larger instances. And one of those questions is how do these panics occur, right? What is it about human psychology or group psychology that allows people to get so caught up in an issue? And then why, with the current online culture, why do these things become such flashes in the pan?
Yeah. I mean, especially with, I mean, look at like the Salem witch trials, for example. You know, that was all word of mouth, little bits of misinformation based on, first person accounts. So something that may or may not have actually taken place in that particular way, spreading via word of mouth. Now, you know, you've got 50 different pieces of misinformation that are disseminated instantly, you know, over numerous online channels. I mean, there's really no end to it. It's just like it's exponentially easier for this kind of thing, this kind of information to spread.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm glad you made that, because the barrier for communication, what we would call the cost of communication, is so much lower. And you and I have talked about this off air before, about how quickly and strangely these things can rise and fall. In our last episode, we talked about Martin Shkreli. Mm-hmm. And one of the most fascinating things I think you pointed out was that this story was up and down within a week.
I mean, it was honestly, in a lot of ways, a day. Yeah. There was definitely more out there, but the majority of the back and forth and the, you know, the Twitter rampage, pitchfork waving kind of scenario that led to him more or less backing down from his position kind of took place within the span of a day.
And it's also true that Jade Helm itself did capture this national attention. Mm-hmm. It became a subject of national debate. There was a poll by the Public Policy Polling in May of 2015. And it found that one third of people identifying as Republicans believed that the Jade Helm exercise was about the government trying to take over Texas. And another third hadn't made their minds up yet. So a lot of people believed that something fishy was afoot. And I think, and this is just me speculating here, folks, but I think part of this comes from the absence of transparency.
100%.
You're not letting journalists observe events. And if there were blackouts, as people allege, human beings, we are analytical. We think in categories, right?
And we fill in blanks.
And we fill in blanks, exactly. So we begin generating our own explanations, and those explanations that we generate are based upon our pre-existing beliefs or values, right? Which is why the same ambiguous event can mean two very different things to people. We heard allegations that this was part of a plan to prevent Russia from assisting the annexation of a U.S. state by Mexico, which seems very far out there. Let's see, we heard asteroids. We heard that there was going to be construction beneath the ground, and that was part of it. And of all these things we heard, what we found at the conclusion of this on September 15th, 2015, was that most of it, most of those concerns didn't come to fruition. And this doesn't mean that Jade Helm is by any means a good thing, because it leads to the larger question of why the military would be doing this domestic activity, right?
Well, we talked about this a little bit on the Periscope, and this was interesting point that you brought up that hadn't occurred to me, is they need to be able to train in different terrains, like in different real-world scenarios, and especially like in a pretty arid, you know, climate like Texas, very similar to some of the desert situations that they, you know, end up in when they're deployed.
Sure, but then the other question is, at what point does it unreasonably impinge upon the lives of U.S. citizens or residents? You know, is there a line? Should a line exist?
Well, my question is, did it?
Yeah, it seems like it didn't. From the reports we've heard,
yeah,
it seems like the main civilians that were affected by this were people who were involved in crime, just in case crime.
Right, you know? or people that were seeking it out and trying to more or less fight back, or at least, you know, pose a counter threat to it, you know?
Yeah. And then there's the other, one of the questions that people also said was that this was an intelligence operation. It was about informational awareness being this concept that, or the informational awareness being this idea that you can trace all electronic activity. You want to know as much as you can about every individual or group and their interactions between each other. That's NSA stuff, you know, and, that is completely plausible, and that impinges upon people's lives far more than a military exercise outside of your town. Right. And unfortunately, that's because that stuff is still warrantless. There is pretty much no effective supervision, and there's not really a means of recourse for the average person, you and I included, as well as you listeners, as well as you, Matt. Sorry. But let's look at some other examples of these kinds of panics.
So, I mean, my favorite of these, because I remember exactly where I was when this went down, was Y2K. Y2K, Y2K.
So Y2K, much not the zippers.
No, definitely not. So much made of Y2K. This belief that because of the specifications of computer date keeping, of all things.
Right, like it was two place digits or something.
Right, exactly. The year 2000 would cause massive internal errors in computer programs across the planet, possibly throwing the world into economic and social turmoil, including financial systems,
right,
data storage at corporations, you know, to your own personal computer.
Wall Street crashes, all debts are erased because they no longer exist. Satellites fall from the sky, rain and fire.
There were massive reactions to this. I mean, people were going so far as to hoard, like, water, supplies.
Right.
Walmarts got cleaned out the night before of people getting gas masks and, you know, like, purified water in, you know, in bulk and, you know, food
now,
and things like that.
Now, you and I differ on this perhaps, but I think it's a good idea to have those things anyway.
No, I mean, I think it probably is too. I'm just saying, it's when it's specifically tied to a theory about a thing that may or may not happen, at that point, you're probably not thinking ahead enough, you know? Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something wrong with being prepared for, you know, the unknown.
And there's also a group mentality at work there too.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, it was reported widely, you know, there were cameras in the Walmart showing all the empty shelves and, you know, no more food, bread, eggs, things like that. People just sort of like what happened with the snowpocalypse here in Atlanta.
Right.
You know? It's like all these reports of just grocery stores with the shelves completely cleaned out. It was very much that kind of situation.
Oh boy. And you listeners in northern climes,
We're laughing
so hard at us. It was strange because, you know, Matt and I made a video about how we couldn't make a video because of this, because the city of Atlanta shut down.
Right.
It was just not prepared. It all goes back, not to be too much of a Boy Scout about it, but it all goes back to preparation. The city had what, 3 snowplows maybe in the entire city.
Right.
And so it was bonkers out there. One of my friends who is a special ed teacher, had to stay at the school overnight and take care of all these kids whose parents didn't get them.
Our IT guy, Izzy, had to basically sleep in his car because everything was at such a standstill. I mean, back to Y2K though, I do feel like not exactly the same, but a similar kind of panic that was very observable for us in like, in a very like palpable way.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. If we could talk a little bit about some of the psychology behind these things, first I want to underline and say this, I don't think ridiculing people is the right way to approach these kind of things, because the idea of a government takeover of a town or a city or a place, right, is plausible. That stuff can happen. It happens in other countries. It's happening now in other parts of the world. Now, does it seem unreasonable to think that would happen here in the U.S.? Well, it's less plausible because we would have to question what the motivation for that would be.
Well, I don't think anyone would argue that if the situation was right, if they wanted to, they certainly have the means and the personnel to do this thing.
Sure, the U.S. military is by far the most powerful military in the world. However, we do have a legal framework that is meant to prevent that kind of situation from occurring.
Yeah, but we also have a legal framework that supposedly prevents things like NSA wiretapping from occurring.
All right. Touche, my friend. That's a good point.
Just saying.
Yeah, and then it goes back to the idea of secret courts and secret laws and secret interpretations of those laws.
Just saying, things are bent. Things are, malleable.
That's true. Yeah, you're spot on with that. Here's one of the things I think we can look at psychologically. So the idea that this stuff can happen, it's plausible, or at least it's possible, and due in large part to the malleability of the laws, as you astutely point out. If we talk about the psychology, then I would say that part of it is that certain events or concepts can become this kind of steam vent, and people can project other concerns about it,
Absolutely.
So the Salem witch trials, that's part of it. And there is life was very difficult then.
Absolutely.
In terms of food, in terms of security and shelter. And here we're in a country with booming inequality, very divisive, I won't say great powers, but very divisive political parties that do not want to work with each other. Right. And there is a tension across the country. And when there is a tension like this, the smallest thing can topple the Jenga tower, And so this is something that I think we need to be aware of. There is a subtext here that allows for this kind of panic to occur. In 2012, we saw another thing. That was one of my, you remember the 2012 panic?
I do.
And these are both a little bit different to Jade Helm because these are apocalyptic panics. So these kind of events all have certain commonalities. One, it is considered to affect a large group of people. Two, it has a due date, a very specific due date, July 15th, 2015, January 1st, 2000.
Time and again, we hear about these things and these due dates pass every time.
Right.
Every time.
I mean, I think we've said it before, but somewhere the world is ending for someone.
That's true.
Every day.
Yeah.
And, I think there's an average of, I can't remember where I got this number, but I'll try to find a source for everyone. I think there's an average of 100 something apocalyptic predictions each year. Mm-hmm. There's some group of people saying, this year, guys,
the big one.
This is the big one. The other one didn't happen because we weren't ready with our original prediction. But now, my friends.
Are you familiar with the Church of the Subgenius?
Yeah, vaguely. Yeah.
So they have this, this event. So for anyone that's not aware, the Church of the Subgenius is, it's a cult, but it's a joke cult.
Right.
I mean, it's, you sign up, you pay a membership, you get a membership card. You can become ordained in the Church of the Subgenius. But central themes is this idea of X Day, which is an event they have. It's basically like a hedonistic bacchanalia in the woods where they, do a lot of drugs and party and, do weird sermons about slack, which is with their fundamental principle. You got to have slack. It means just kind of like not caring and just doing your own thing and not worrying about it. But X Day, their prophet, Bob Dobbs, who is embodied by this, sort of clip art, you know, 50s house father with a pipe.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not mischaracterizing this too much. Any sub-genii out there, please, write in and correct me all day. Right. But there was this date that was, associated with the end of the world. And it turns out that they read it backwards or they read it upside down or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So it passes it's passed officially for the first time. And whatever the inverse of it isn't going to be for another, you know, 1,000 years or something like that.
I can get on board with that. I've never really understood the Church of the Subgenius because I haven't looked into it, but I love the idea of a, wink and a nod.
Well, it's tongue in cheek, the whole thing. This idea of like an apocalyptic cult or the idea of any kind of apocalyptic prediction is sort of like, oh, we read the tablet wrong or, you know, it's human beings are fallible and that's sort of the joke therein, you know.
Right. And again, this concern of, I guess what we're talking about now is the way in which Jade Helm became this subject of national concern, right? And the same way in which Y2K or the 2012 stuff became a concern. And we kept an eye on this. We looked to see if there were different things happening. And at this point, the stuff we found, which we've mentioned before, wasn't the stuff that was predicted. I've got an interesting book here, Noel, that you've seen me flipping through as we're talking.
Yeah.
The name of this book is Outbreak, The Encyclopedia of Extraordinary Social Behavior. And what this book does is it gathers all sorts of different mass panics, right? The one I have a page on now is Halley's Comet Scare, which was worldwide in 1910. He said that, and this comes to us from a prediction in 1881. An astronomer named Sir William Huggins was analyzing light spectra from comets when he discovered the presence of a lethal gas called cyanogen. And this produced a worldwide panic where people believed that the next time Halley's Comet passed Earth, the entire planet would be poisoned with this deadly gas. And this is just one example.
This is a weighty volume here, folks.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff here.
Very small print.
I mean, just say when. I'll just flip through and you say when.
When.
Okay. The Mora Witch Affair. This is Scandinavian countries in 1664, 1676, specifically Sweden. And it's the witch mania, right? When reports from the countryside alleged witchcraft was taking place, the authorities were first reluctant to take action. But as complaints continued to be made, despite the protest of doctors, they decided rigorous measures were needed. The number of the executed has never been established, but it is likely to approach 200, including some children. So what we have here is, this also has the context where they give you a blow by blow of how it occurred and the social conditions of the time, right? And what we've seen is that there is a relationship, a correlation between, economic difficulties and the rise of concerns about stuff like this. It just doesn't, these kinds of widespread panics, you gotta find a different phrase. I keep thinking of the band. These kind of concerns don't seem to spread in times of economic booms.
It makes me think of it's actually a show that I'm working on right now. It's a little bit hush hush. I'm not going to say too much about it, but a person that we interviewed was a professor who conducted a survey of American fears, and one of the biggest factors leading to higher levels of fear about a wide variety of things was economic hardship paired with lower levels of education.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. But now we've opened another conspiracy, Noel, because we do have to keep that on the hush, don't we?
We definitely do.
Yeah.
It's going to be good, though.
Yeah, no spoilers. You'll hear about it soon enough. And speaking about hearing stuff, We'd like to hear from you about what your take on this entire event is. Is there something that Noel and Matt and I missed? You know, is there something that was unreported that should have been reported? Has it been suppressed somehow? Because we do want to know. Otherwise, at the basis of this, it seems like a lot of the predictions that people made did not occur. And just to drive home how much we appreciate listener mail, let's do some right now.
Let's do it. Okay, we've got one here from Sandy concerning the episode you and I did on Big Pharma the other week. I cringed when I heard you guys mention kratom. And just a refresher, kratom was the herb I mentioned that, you know, has been reported to be able to treat multiple kinds of addictions. And as Sandy puts it here, kratom actually is also good for treating fibromyalgia, which I believe is a nerve condition that creates pretty widespread pain just all over. Everyone, we'd like to keep quiet about this because we are so afraid it's going to be outlawed, as I mentioned in the episode as well. It's definitely on a few watch lists. It is not something to be abused, but has many medicinal uses. So keep it on the down low, lol. Love y'all and the show, Sandy.
Sandy, thanks so much for writing, and we appreciate your point. You might be thinking, well, if you appreciate my point, why'd you read the letter on the air, jerks? But we're reading it on the air because, first off, it's not like our show is going to be the thing that tips the DEA's hat. You know, I don't think so either. We have to keep a realistic opinion of ourselves. And, but we do want other listeners, who perhaps missed that last episode, to know about this, especially if you have someone in your life who has an addiction problem. Mm-hmm. You know, those things destroy lives, and often it's very difficult to get help through the current system, right?
Sure.
So if there's something that can free people from that, we want you, our listeners, to know about it. Mm-hmm. This can literally be a life and death thing. And Sandy, we also hope that it is not outlawed, and we agree. I've been reading about this nonstop since you introduced the concept, Noel. I had never heard of it. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate it, and we want to know more about it. I promise you we won't do an episode on it.
No.
If that's too much publicity. So let's go to another one here. All right. Lupton P writes to us and says, please consider the underwear bomber as a podcast topic. What do you know about this 2009 Christmas Day incident? Nigerian Umar Farouk Abdul Muttalib and his attempt to detonate an explosive substance might be all you remember. But are you aware of the sharp-dressed man, the man in orange, or the person on the flight recording the entire incident? The official story of events was ever-changing, and several passengers made statements that suggest there's more to the story. Two lawyers that were passengers on the flight were even preparing to be called as witnesses in the defense of Muttalib. So this goes on, and Lupton's provided a lot of sources here. We wanted to put this out into the ether and ask you guys if you would like to hear something about the underwear bomber. So let us know. Do you remember that, Noel?
Basically what he said, you know,
yeah.
The broad strokes. That's about it.
He goes into much more detail, we can see here. So let's see. What do you think? Should we do one more listener mail, or should we go straight to...
Wait, what's that?
What's that noise?
Oh, my God.
It's you.
I guess it is. This is weird. I can't convince
you. You know, I was thinking it might be nice if we can convince Matt to do a moment.
That'd be good. Yeah, we should have a moment. Yeah, like get him to Skype in.
Yeah, we'll see if we can work on that. Let us.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah,
because honestly, I don't have much today, man. I feel like this is worn me plumb out talking about this topic. I'm sort of fighting a little bit of a respiratory bug. And it was all I could do to kind of wade my way through this conversation. But I'm sort of fading a little bit here, honestly, Ben.
Yeah.
Not too ashamed to say.
I feel you, man. The sickness is going through the office. If you listen to other How Stuff Works shows, which we strongly recommend,
definitely,
then you might hear some other people getting the crud or the Batman voice.
It's annoying though, because I've literally made it all year without getting anything, and that is super unusual for me. And now all of a sudden I'm stricken.
Well, what about the power of positive thought, man?
Well, I'm going to work on that. I've tried soup. I've tried juice. There's a really good juice place here in Atlanta called Arden's Garden.
Yeah.
And they make a delicious combo of ginger, apple juice, and
carrots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, every time I take one of those, it usually knocks whatever I feel like is coming right out, but did not seem to do the trick this time.
They also have the that complete recovery juice stuff.
Maybe I'll do that one. Yeah, no, that's a good one.
The exercise might also be good.
Okay.
I've heard you can exercise away a bug. I don't know if that's true.
So you're saying I should get an exorcist?
Yes. Yeah.
To exercise my
you should get an exorcist
from me.
You know, there is still a chief exorcist at the Vatican.
I got a thing.
What?
Speaking of the Vatican.
Yeah.
What's up with the Pope meeting with this Kim Davis woman? That bummed me out to no end.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Secretly.
Oh, what?
Yeah, and the only way it came out was because Kim Davis's loudmouth lawyers, who have been caught very recently for distributing false information, like they had a picture that was of some sort of event in Chile, I believe, and they claimed that it was a prayer group, a giant prayer group in her honor or like for her benefit, and then they ultimately came out and said that no, in fact, it was another event. They may not have claimed they knew, but whatever. It definitely was misinformation. So we were really hoping. And I say this because this Pope has been intriguing in a lot of ways.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
He's, you know, he definitely seems like he's got some interesting, more, you know, progressive ideas about climate change and, you know, a lot of different things that you don't typically hear a Pope be outspoken about.
But yeah. He's more involved, at least politically or in secular issues. And he actually, you may have heard of this before, the idea of liberation theology, which is something that a lot of Catholic priests or members of the church in South and Central America were involved with. It was this idea of connecting religion and, in some cases, leftist movements.
Sure.
Which, you know, was not super popular with the U.S. at the time, but people will tell you that the current Pope's perspective on things like economic inequality or a couple of other issues are echoes of liberation theology, but also still it's the Pope. The Pope is going to have views that other people would consider very, very conservative.
Well, and I guess maybe it's very naive of me, but this particular Pope just gave this sense that he was a little different. You know, he was all about transparency. And so the fact that he, you know, took 15 minutes out of his schedule to secretly meet with this woman and it wasn't on his itinerary, you know, his camp didn't release this information. Again, it was her loudmouth attorneys that tweeted it out, you know, like, hey, you know, she's totally vindicated. The Pope's all about, you know, denying
right.
the rights.
Right. So, yeah, this is the
of gay men and women.
Right. Cause that's
get married.
Kim. That's who, what's her name, Kim Davis?
Kim Davis. She was the county clerk in Rowan County, Kentucky, who, after the Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional to deny gay men and women the right to be married, she refused to issue marriage licenses.
So you don't think the meeting was something where he said, you think the meeting was like congratulatory? I approve.
Well, I mean, the position of the Vatican is, yes, the meeting occurred, and that is as far as they are going with it. So I suppose everything that we know about what was said or not said is coming from Kim Davis's camp, so it could all be absolute hogwash. But according to her people, you know, he said something to the effect of stay strong or, you know, like gave some measure of approval for her stance in this whole situation.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, the Pope is such a practitioner of what would be called soft diplomacy.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Because it's not like the Pope can send an army into a country.
It's true.
Does he still Snapchat you?
Not in a long time, Ben.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Cause I still like, we text.
What? You
know? Yeah, me and the Pope text. It's just basic stuff. Just like, oh, how's the game? And he's like, oh man, look at my shoes. No, of course, we also want to point out that we're not in any way, I feel like we have to say this, we're not in any way trying to denigrate a religion or a religion.
Not at all. No, yeah. I mean, I'm I am not anti-religion at all if people are able to use it in a way that's positive for them personally. I mean, when I start having issues is when it's used as a tool to harm people or to cut people down and make people less than. Then I start having issues. But this was just an interesting turn of events for me.
Yeah, I had not heard of that story, and I try to keep an eye on the current Pope. But let us know what you think about the Pope, this Pope, or the papacy in general, because that seems like a topic we could dig into. Also, let us know, again, if anything occurred in Jade Helm. If you want to just hit us up on the internet, we're there all the time. We are Conspiracy Stuff at both Facebook and Twitter. We also have a website that you can go to. It is stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com. Pain to type, but it's worth it when you get there. Let's see what else, Noel.
Well, we have an email, and that is
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit youtube.com/conspiracy stuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracy stuff.